Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. My name is Russ Steinberg. I am joined by all of my co-editors today. Chris Schutte, how are you?
I'm doing great, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing great. Kyle Cajero up in Idaho, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
And Greg Mitchell, who may or may not be sleeping on a cot at midcourt at UMKC.
Hey, this is what my voice sounds like.
Yeah, Greg is back with us for the first time in a while.
Very exciting, I'm sure, for everybody. Not.
Oh. All right, that'll probably work. If not, then me talking right now is going to be the awkward transition. Now we cut to something really weird.
We're live, man.
Yeah, we're not really live. We're just recording it. Thank God. FIU is about to beat Gulf Coast. Gulf Coast is really fallen.
Yeah, they've played like a bunch of teams that are like noteworthy, and I keep wanting to think that they like might be like kind of good, but in reality, I think they're actually like pretty butt.
Michael Fly, more like Michael Fall Flat on Your Face.
Oh, this is going to be a 5-game losing streak for them.
Oof. Yeah, they beat South Dakota State in whatever stupid tournament they played in.
How the hell did that happen?
I thought that was a one-off.
I think they were in the same tournament, didn't play, but they played a game before the tournament at Florida Gulf Coast, which was really strange.
Well, Monmouth not even putting up a fight against Kentucky. This is going to be the first team that Kentucky's actually handled.
Monmouth hasn't won yet, have they?
No, I don't think they have. Hold on.
Remember when like King Rice was like a hot commodity on the coaching sphere?
He was going to be the next UNC.
I was going to say, I think we on the podcast, we discussed that like a few years ago, which that seems crazy now.
So Monmouth is 0-7, about to be 0-8. Losses to Lehigh, Colgate, St. Joe's, West Virginia, Valpo, Fullerton, and Princeton.
There are 7 winless teams, and they are one of them.
How many of the 7 are from like MEAC or SWAC schools?
Only 2, believe it or
not. How many from the Southland?
Oh, the Southland.
One's got to be the Cougs.
Coppin State and Alabama A&M are your MEAC SWAC duo. And then Maine and Mount St. Mary's are the other 2. Can you guess the final winless team?
All right. Give me Houston Baptist.
No. Okay, one hint about this team. Let's see, they're 0-7. That's not a big hint there. They have played 3 Power Fives, lost to all of them by over 20 points apiece. And they nearly won against Lafayette.
Is it Arkansas Pine Bluff?
It is not, no.
Oh. Can you tell us the conference?
Okay. Oh, how impressed would you have been if I got that?
Fairly, yes. They're out of the Atlantic 10, believe it or not.
Fordham?
Is it LaSalle?
It is LaSalle, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Ashley Howard.
Yeah.
Dog.
I wonder if this is the latest in a season an A-10 school has gone without a win.
I don't know. Duquesne's had some bad teams. Actually, Fordham had a team a few years ago that I think only won 2 games all season.
Aren't they doing okay this year?
A-10, actually.
I mean, they're 5-1, but they haven't played anybody.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now. They haven't. And they don't play anybody. Yeah. They play Rutgers. But they don't, so they don't play anybody.
Rutgers is coming off a big win tonight against Miami.
Yeah. So 2010, Fordham went 2-26. However, they beat Sacred Heart on November 18th.
What was the other win? Was it a non-D1?
No, it was Stony Brook on December 8th.
Okay.
2009, they started off 0-6, got their first win against Lafayette on December the 8th. They won three games that year.
Fantastic.
And if you could tell me the coach of those Fordham teams and why he is famous, I'll be very impressed.
I'm not even going to bother.
I have no idea.
The head coach of those teams was Derek Wittenberg. Now, do you know why he is notable?
Nope.
No, sir.
This is bad analysis.
Do you know the NC State National Championship?
Oh, he was on that team.
With Jimmy V. He was, not only was he on that team, he threw the air ball.
There you go.
Lorenzo Charles dunked it to win the game.
Wasn't the only air ball he threw. All right, I'm going to leave.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Oh, nice. The production value of this podcast has gone through the roof in 2018.
It has.
The music when the Cougs lose yet another game.
Hey, they're going to win tomorrow night.
Who are they playing?
East West.
Oh, the Directions.
The Directions, yes.
Is that the school that like they put in like the car insurance commercials during March Madness? Like Tech State?
Do they play North-South this year?
Next year.
Yeah, the star of East West is a middle-aged white guy wearing a sweatband and a blue jersey with no team name on it.
Yeah, and I actually, so when I pump that like into a search engine, I guess I get like a massage school. So I need to figure out what this school actually is.
Might want to clear that browser history.
Are you on a work computer?
I'm not. Let's see.
The good news for the Cougs is they have beaten them in the last two meetings by 28 and 48 points, respectively.
So they're going to get the Cougs. Win. The Phantoms, the East-West University Phantoms. How about that?
I will say this about the Cougs, is I've watched more of their games than I would like to admit. They've been pretty frisky in some of these games. Like, they gave Notre Dame a close one, and they actually should have won that game against Illinois State.
Yeah, and in that game against Illinois State, towards the end there, they had the whole take a three, have an air ball, but have a guy right under the hoop who puts it in, which is usually like the sign that you're going to pull the upset, and they ended up not doing it. And that was,
That's the Derek Wittenberg. Yeah.
That brings it full circle. But that had to be frustrating because that would have been the biggest win at that program in years.
Any win at that program is a big win.
Such is life as the Cougs.
Oh, we have a new Rothsteinism here. It was just dropped into the Blogger Boys Slack. So much Victor Drago in Jack Salt.
Come on, man.
John.
Does he only watch TNT movies that pop up, or what?
Do they show A Few Good Men on TNT?
Oh, I bet they do.
Yeah, maybe.
I think there's probably room to like workshop a bit is like John Rothstein is like Manhattan Bill Simmons or something like that.
Oh, he absolutely is. That's really good.
He follows me on Twitter, though, so I don't want to unleash that one to the free world.
Who, John or Bill Simmons?
John.
Really?
I don't think he would find that insulting, though.
I thought he blocked you.
No, he unblocked me and then followed me.
Wow, I'm insanely jealous.
Me and John are tight. It was just out of the blue one day. He, like, showed up on my timeline. Like, I woke up, and I think I just got into work, and I was scrolling through Twitter. And I saw like the Stay Hungry, Stay Humble. And I was like, I haven't seen those in like 4 months. And so I'm like, okay, he must have unblocked me. So I go to his page. John Rothstein follows you. And I was like, hold on. So I had to have been on his mind if he just went out of his way to not only unblock me, but then to follow up and keep up with my content. Like,
how does that make you feel that you were on the mind of a John Rothstein?
I'm not sure if I should be concerned or flattered.
Danny Hurley actually said epitome of brutality during his press conference last night.
He also flips houses like people in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Which totally not a problematic comparison to make.
That worked out well.
Yeah.
Very, yes.
All right. Should we talk about something?
Our list of like 19 things we had that we were going to talk about.
Yeah. Well, okay, so here's something we could talk about. Nevada played Loyola yesterday.
They did.
Nevada not only won, but won convincingly, which is something we all figured might happen. I was watching UConn play UMass Lowell, so I can't say too much about this game. But Chris, you watched it, so what happened?
Nevada is just significantly better and more talented than Loyola. Just right from the jump, you could kind of tell that. I don't know if you want to. It was, you can call it like a revenge game since they narrowly lost to Loyola in the tournament last year. But just right from the jump, you could just tell that they were not losing that game. Caleb and Cody Martin were fantastic, especially in the first half. I think they combined for, I don't know, 25 points or so. And it ended up being a 14-point game in the end. There was a brief moment where it looked like Loyola was going to like get within 10. But other than the first couple minutes, Nevada was up pretty much double digits the entire time. It was very frightening for some people.
I just hope that the rest of the mid-major madness voters stop ranking Loyola. This is my plea to you. They're a bunch of pretenders. I mean, if losing a
stop ranking them at all,
huh? Yeah, not ranking them at all. Yeah, I'm staunchly for that.
Fraudulent ass ramblers.
Take.
I think just because Clayton Custer, I mean, he's a really good player, and obviously he was the NBC Player of the Year, and I think because he returned, that kind of probably falsely elevated them a lot more. Like, I know Akrutwig's a good player, and he's young, and obviously Marcus Towns is good. But, I mean, they lost the guys like Andrea Jackson, Dante Ingram, that would have been on the Martin twins last night. And those are, like, long, versatile defenders that, you know, you kind of have to have success against high-level competition. And they're not there anymore. And I think a lot of people kind of breezed over the fact that, yeah, they were returning some players, but they also lost some extremely important players as well. And I think they had young players and too. Lost. But again, like you said, you can't just, it's unreasonable to just say, hey, you're a Final Four team again.
And it's, you have to remember not to look at Loyola just as a Final Four team, but also as a bubble team, which they would have been had they not won the Missouri Valley
Tournament. I don't think they would have gotten it at all, right?
Like, No, in all likelihood, they wouldn't have. So, like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, fringe NCAA tournament team that happened to win four games when they got there, and not to take anything away from them, that run was amazing. But, like,
didn't exactly
all year long,
be all that good either.
Tennessee's pretty good. I'm still not convinced that that's like a Final Four caliber team either last year or this year.
They were in the same region where Virginia lost and Arizona lost. And I think Arizona wasn't in the same region, but still they were in like,
no, I think Arizona was.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm going to look up who the two seed in that region was too.
It was Cincinnati because Nevada beat them.
And Tennessee was the three, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They beat Miami the six, and then Tennessee.
So that was
three.
Legit. I mean, and then obviously we know Nevada's good, and then they kind of got the direct beneficiary of the Virginia loss by playing a K-State then in the Elite Eight.
Right.
So, and again, it was an amazing run, and I think it meant a lot to the Valley. But you know, I think you're absolutely right that can't be the expectation. I mean, it's not fair to anybody at that point.
Right. And like you said, I understand why there were expectations there. Towns and Custer coming back, and then you bring back Krutwig, someone who really emerged by the end of the season as like a legitimate big. But they could still be a good team. Like, I don't think they're bad, but it's going to take time. I was talking to a Loyola fan on Twitter last night who was basically saying, you know, we've got three or four new guys seeing either starting or seeing starters minutes. And it just takes a while to develop something. and that's why they're taking losses early. They're 4-3. Once you get to the Valley play, though, they might be okay. I think Southern Illinois has been disappointing. Illinois State, they don't have any bad losses, but I think I'm not sure they've really lived up to what we thought that they could be. Like, Loyola is going to be competitive, and they'll be solid. Maybe if they're not an NCAA tournament team, they'll still probably be an NIT team. Like, they'll be legit by the end of the year, but Nevada might be the best team in the country. And I don't think, I know it's not even December 1st, but I don't think it's unrealistic to say that they could go undefeated in the regular season.
This week is going to be their hardest, though. I'm going to pull up their schedule real quick, but I think this is the week that they play USC, and then they play Arizona State, I believe.
Yeah.
And then Grand Canyon, which is kind of the tune-up before they take on Mike Dom.
Yeah, I mean, these next four games are all interesting. There are no layups in those four. And, you know, I mean, we've said this 100 times. It's so hard to go undefeated. Like, you could be Nevada good and lose to a New Mexico, a San Diego State, UNLV, like a mediocre team that gets you on a bad night. It happens all the time. But, you know, KenPom gives them a 7.5% chance to go undefeated. Like, that is significant at this point in the season. I don't think, you know, if I had to guess, I don't think they will go undefeated, but you can't ignore that. They have the number one offense in America per KenPom, top 50 defense. Look at their KenPom page. It's just lit up in green pretty much everywhere. They could be the best team in the country. And Kyle, I think that's maybe why you still had them ranked number one in your rankings, despite Gonzaga knocking off Duke and Maui.
I'm upset that I was not there with you, Kyle.
I bullied you out of that.
You did.
I think that's the hill that I'm going to die on. And predictably, I got tons and tons of flack online for it. And, you know, I probably deserve some of that. But just like the optics of that Nevada team compared to the optics of the Gonzaga team. And I know that they've played two very, very, very right. different schedules.
Right. So not to cut you off, but this is important, what this is coming down to here, because I think you would agree resume-wise, Gonzaga has the better resume.
Yes.
But you think Nevada's personnel is better, which is fair. Now, you know, you always think, like, beginning of the season, your rankings or whatever are all predictive, all based on personnel, what you think is going to happen, how good you think these teams are going to be. Then they start building resumes and they, you know, level out. And then by the end, it's completely based on what you've done. So is it fair to say that right now you're still more looking at what Nevada can be rather than what Gonzaga has done?
Yeah, I could definitely say that. And, you know, especially we just mentioned their schedule and how, like, most of their tests are ahead of them. I know Gonzaga's got quite a few games. They play Tennessee and they still play North Carolina. And both of those games are going to be, you know, really huge, like potentially two top five, maybe top 10 matchups. But Nevada's schedule is just getting started. And just given what I've seen so far, and admittedly, I've seen this Nevada team more than I've seen Gonzaga so far. Which I don't know how much or little that's saying, but like Nevada's dominating these teams. Like they've won all seven of their games by double figures. I mean, their offense has just so much, you know, flow and motion to it. When they're clicking, it's just so fun to watch. And given Gonzaga's injury situation right now, you know, Gino Crandall broke his hand earlier this week, which was a blow to them. And then they were already down Tilly. Like they're going to struggle a bit, and they're going to have to play some underclassmen that probably wouldn't, you know, get this much playing time had those two hadn't been injured. But yeah, just to put a cap on this little rambling explanation, you know, when I picture these two teams playing on a neutral in my mind, completely hypothetical, you know, I just think given Nevada's athleticism and their depth, I think they get the edge.
And I think they've got like a long ways to go potentially as well in terms of, you know, where they can be defensively just because of a Trey Porter. It's a, you know, I don't think they had that type of guy last year. So, I mean, as you mentioned, their offense is awesome, and you know, currently the most efficient in the country per KenPom. But I just think like they've got so much potential defensively as the year goes on that that's a scary proposition for everybody else.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the things that they still haven't figured out. I mean, not to echo, you know, stuff that's well in the past, but like that exhibition showing against Washington was pretty horrible. And then they let San Francisco State like hang with them. Like there's still some issues that need to be addressed, but you know, it's still December. It's not even December yet. So.
And is there a team longer than them on average in the country, you think? Maybe.
Probably no. A Power Five team that I.
Syracuse. Like,
it's got to be. They've got to be right up there. I don't want to throw out the cliches right now, but I mean, they've in terms of wingspan, they have to be up there in terms of the five man lineup that they will consistently put on the court.
You know, might I offer Western Kentucky as another team with a lot of lane, at least down low. I think I saw a stat in the offseason where like they have four guys with wingspans like 6'10" or like longer.
So here's something I was thinking about actually the other day while I was calculating the rankings. Everybody except for one voter has Nevada and Gonzaga 1-2 in whatever order. And I have Gonzaga number one, Nevada number two. And I think that those two teams are so far ahead of everybody else that Nevada could lose to USC on Saturday, maybe even lose to Arizona State next week. And I'm not sure I would drop them to number three. Like, it's not an automatic drop them because they lose sort of thing, because I think that they are just in a different league than even my number three team, which is Buffalo. Am I crazy for thinking that?
No, I don't think so, because I think like last year we had the same kind of thing for a while with Gonzaga and St. Mary's, right? And then, like, I think, especially with St. Mary's, I didn't see them as being in that same kind of, you know, clear upper echelon. I totally agree. Who's the team that this person has wedged in between them?
It's Buffalo. At number two.
Okay, I was going to say that. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, not to
I mean,
me,
it
but
doesn't.
I can,
but...
it, no, I was going to say it, it but if it makes sense that that's the team, I guess.
Yeah.
For someone that's not going to make sense. Okay.
Greg, this is the first time we've had you on in a while. Should we all sit back and let you do a whack minute?
Start the fire. Get nice and comfortable.
I will. Hold on. Let me play the whack minute music.
I'm starting to entertain the idea that, or at least think about a world in which Dan Marley is not the coach of Grand Canyon, which I,
ooh.
It's you know, and I don't, they haven't done anything wrong this year. They lost to Seton Hall in a game that they could have won. They lost to Utah all in the Wooden Legacy, in a game that, you know, they essentially had a home court advantage that whole time. And whatever, I was talking to some people on Twitter about this the other day. It doesn't really matter, you know, in the long run if they win those games or not. But, you know, for a school that has kind of the blatantly large aspirations that they do, those are the type of games that, you know, you would hope you'd win now again. They did beat San Diego State 2 years in a row, once on the road. So it's not like they haven't won these games out of conference, but they consistently, and this is really the first year they're playing, you know, a legit out of conference schedule that's just not loaded with sub 300 KenPom teams at home. I don't know that they're, you have the whole like Havoc's thing and, you know, all this hype. If he's not there, I think he obviously is a big part of it and he can recruit. I don't think they get, especially out of California, a few of the guys they've gotten, without him. But, you know, you've got a guy like Oscar Freyer who's uber talented, and I've talked to a number of coaches in the WAC who always like point to, you know, how skilled he is, and he's a really good player, but, you know, as a junior he probably should be a star. You know, the offense last year just never lived up to where it was. They had some lingering injuries that may have been the reason why Casey Benson wasn't, I don't think he was kind of miss a cast in the role he was playing. But the fact is, I'm starting to wonder if, in terms of a development it's not going as fast as it should, considering all the resources and all the talent. Having said that, this is only the second year that they've been eligible for the NCAA tournament. They didn't make it last year. They made the WAC title game. It wasn't a, you know, it was a somewhat competitive game. So it's not like the sky's falling on them, but he's so entwined with that program, more so than probably many coaches in America that haven't had a ton of success yet. So I wonder what all that would look like, all the resources, the arena, all that stuff, if he wasn't the coach. So I would ask you guys what you think about a world in which Thunder Dan is not in Phoenix.
So which former son would they hire to take its place? Like Charles Barkley?
He still has his restaurant chain in Phoenix, so that might be a little bit of an issue. And by he, I mean Dan Marley.
I'm trying to remember some guys right now.
Let's remember some guys.
Kevin Johnson. Steve Nash.
How about a former Phoenix Sun who has significant head coaching experience, Jason Kidd?
Oh my God, that would be a train wreck.
But yeah, no, I mean, is all that kind of fabricated energy around the program, is it because of him? I don't know. I mean, or is it like specifically intertwined with him? I don't know. He's a guy who a couple years ago kept popping up, or his name would be mentioned, maybe just casually in a lot of high major coaching searches. I don't know if that would ever happen. I mean, but
you know why there's all that hype? Because all of the online courses, that school is made entirely of posters. The people post and they go to games.
Forged into crucible.
And that's... Yes.
If we're talking just a fan thing, I mean, I grew up in Tucson. I knew a lot of people mm-hmm. that went to GCU. And there's not a lot to do up there if you're not like going to go over to ASU and party and whatnot. And, you know, it's a very religious school. They don't have a football team. And they're just all these kind of like happy-go-lucky kids, you know, going to basketball games and stuff. And I feel like the culture that they've built, just with the fan involvement and with the community involvement too, like that's not going to go no matter who they coach.
Okay. And I think that was my main question. That's awesome that you've got that perspective, because that's obviously something I don't know. But when they were like not Division I, was that still kind of there?
You know,
like had they laid the groundwork for that?
I don't remember, just because mm-hmm. like I wasn't really super involved with GCU until like, you know, people my age started to go there and whatnot, which was like 5 years ago ish. But no, I feel like I couldn't tell you that, but yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it could definitely keep going.
Yeah. I mean, they stayed to me one of the most interesting teams in the country, just with everything that's involved with it. So I would end this WAC minute.
Northern Kentucky is what Grand Canyon wants to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Northern Kentucky is really good.
Yeah. I'm just going to kind of hijack this and segue into a Horizon League minute. They're up to 7-1. Drew McDonald had I believe he had a triple double last night. Yeah, let me check. 12 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists, and a 20-point win over Morehead State. Probably the favorite in the Horizon League. Horizon League's kind of fun this year, not going to lie.
It is.
There's some interesting things going on. My beloved
Detroit.
Detroit. Antoine Davis. I watched a little bit of their game the other day against, I think it was Bowling Green, and that dude will pull it from anywhere. He is filling it up.
Dang.
I'd have to double check this. I think he was a Houston commit and then decided to go to Detroit when his dad got the job. So he's obviously got the talent. And I mean, for a freshman to be putting up 30 points a game and hitting over 50% of his threes, that's absurd.
Didn't he put up 40?
Yeah, he had, I don't remember.
42, right?
Yeah,
42 against Loyola Maryland.
Yeah, he's He's getting
10 for 14 from three.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's absurd.
We need to take, we've got one more Loyola left that we have to trash on this podcast, and then we've hit the trifecta.
I was actually
going to Marymount.
Talk some pretty good things about them.
So we can't
do Marymount's it, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Hold on. Last thing about Antoine Davis. Detroit's won their last three games. He is 24 of 38 from three in those games.
Pretty good.
Now
that is pretty good.
Correct me if I'm wrong. They had, when Ray McCollum was there, his son was like their star for a year or two, right?
I believe so.
That's how you get it done at Detroit.
Hey, BYU and Illinois State are going to overtime.
Yeah, I've got that game up right now. It's looking pretty interesting, I guess, so far.
That to me would kind of be not a season changer for Illinois State, but really that'd be a game they could really, really use. I know they had a good showing in wherever they were. I don't remember I wrote about this the other day.
I think they were at the Cayman Islands. I think it was Cayman Islands.
You know, because I know they beat Akron and Boise State, which are not, you're not going to hop out of your, you know, pants because of those wins. But considering they'd kind of been fledging around, that was good. So that'd be huge for them.
And you could almost say the same thing about BYU. I mean, this is going to be it. Well, this is going to be their best win if they pull this out. But yeah. If we're going to talk disappointments, I can segue right into BYU.
They really probably should have had that Houston game. I know they got beat by a decent amount, but if you're going to be a contender or potential at-large team at some point, like that's a game you have to have.
Yeah, what a surprise that we went into the season with high expectations for BYU and they've already disappointed us.
Heaven forbid we get like a multi-bid West Coast Conference.
But that
was going to happen though, which is crazy. Like this was their best shot, and given the way that the rest of the WCC is playing so far, like the WCC is pretty good right now. I mean, we briefly mentioned Loyola, who's 7-0. As that went
top 10 in the net.
Yes, top 10 in the net. Loyola Marymount and the Pepperdine University grad in me is dying. But aside from that, San Francisco is still good. San Diego beat Colorado a few nights ago. They're going to be solid. And I'm going to plug my own school, but Pepperdine has the fastest and is one of the most accurate three-point at least, wait, hold on. Don't quote me on that. Pulling it up.
I hate to tell you this, but you are being quoted as we speak, as we are recording this.
Damn. Well, I don't know. Lorenzo Romar is back. He is good again.
There's no sound effect on here
for Wolf Howl.
For Wolf Howl.
I get like four sound effects and the podcast will pick up none of them because it's only recording our individual tracks.
Oh, good.
And I guess with all of that said, like BYU is usually due to drop like one or two games inexplicably against people not named Gonzaga or St. Mary's. So this is going to be a really bad sign if they fall.
It might be like four or five games against.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might actually be four or five. But yeah, it's gonna be bad news for them if they don't start picking up some really good wins, or else, you know, this might really affect their NIT seeding.
And
if you really think about it.
It seems like if they can right the ship, you know, it would obviously start with pulling a game out tonight. There is still, even with the losses to Houston and Nevada, it seems like there is still a path for them, especially in a good WCC where, you know, you don't necessarily maybe have to have that one win against Gonzaga. I mean, they play Mississippi State still on the road, San Diego State on the road, Utah State at home. So, I mean, it seems like there's still the opportunity, which I don't think a lot of schedules at this point, if you haven't made hay as a mid-major, would still provide that opportunity in the non-conference. But as we said, I don't have much faith that that'll actually happen.
So if you were doing such childish things as watching Nevada play Loyola Chicago, you missed something special. UNC Greensboro 111, Greensboro 33. So already you've got a blowout of comical proportions, right? That's almost an 80-point win. But look at the box score, and you will see that Greensboro scored 33 points and committed 37 turnovers. They turned the ball over on 47% of their possessions, scored 0.42 points per possession, committed 18 total fouls, and made 11 total field goals. I don't have any more bad statistics. Their leading scorer had 7 points, Noah Watkins. Shout out to him. The top six leading scorers for that game all played for Greensboro.
Not what you want.
It's not what you want, but that is a remarkable performance. Oh, and Greensboro. So Greensboro College, or College of Greensboro, 0.42 points per possession. UNC Greensboro, 1.42 points per possession. On 15 made threes, 15 of 36 from three.
At what point do you think their coach was just like, I do not care about this. Please just get me out of here. I don't care how bad we would play.
I don't know. I mean, they did have, okay, another like stat to add to this. Their first points of the second half came with 10:18 to go.
Oh yeah, it was like a 32-0 run to start the half or something like that.
How do you even approach coaching in a game like that on both sides?
You stop coaching, right? Like what are you going to do? You become a fan, you're a spectator at that point. Shout out to Wayne Lewis of the Bad Greensboro team. He played 2 minutes and was the only player on his team to not commit a turnover.
Looks like he had a trillion from going off of his box score.
Yes, 2 trillion. That's 2 minutes there.
Wait, what?
Are you not familiar with trillions?
No.
Oh, my God.
I can see it.
So you're familiar with Mark Titus, correct?
Yes.
So his big thing when he was at Ohio State is he would, on the rare occasions that he would get into the game, he would just try to have as little impact on the game as possible. And so, like, the goal was to, after the game, look at the box score and see, like 1 minute and zero of other statistics. And when you look at, like the minute next to all those zeros, it looks like a trillion. So he calls it, whenever you come into the game and you don't record any stats other than just existing, it's called a trillion. And then obviously the more minutes you play, the higher the trillion is.
Wayne Lewis had a 2 trillion.
Correct.
Wow. That's amazing. Something else is that the good Greensboro team attempted 73 field goals. The bad Greensboro team attempted 37.
Did UNC Greensboro make more field goals than bad Greensboro attempted? I'm going to assume that's probably the case.
That is the case.
Let's see. Okay, so if good Greensboro could only take threes in that game, they still would have won. It would have been 45-33. So a little bit of a nail biter there, but still.
Did they cover?
I would guess so.
Do they even have lines for these type of games, like these non-D1 games? I feel like
No, they don't.
People could really easily exploit that.
UNC Greensboro made more free throws than bad Greensboro made field goals.
And they didn't even shoot like an absurd number of free throws either, did they?
No, they went 12 for 21.
Damn, that's not very good.
That's not. Come on.
Do you think there are people at the bad at Greensboro that just hate UNC Greensboro with like a passion? And this was the worst day of their life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
And this was like their Super Bowl. This was their Final Four.
GreensboroFanPage.net.
That is a thing. I am willing to bet that the fans on the Bad Greensboro fan message boards are among the most mentally unstable people you will ever find in your life.
Just after the game, talking like, should have been a 60-point game. Like, too sloppy out there. We got some things we need to clean up.
But hey, props to Greensboro for taking the heat off Toccoa Falls or whatever that, I don't know how you pronounce that school's name. Forever, I will see them in box scores and not know how to pronounce.
So another thing we have to look forward to is Champion Baptist, another one of our favorite non-D1s, is playing Alcorn State on December the 8th, Lamar on the 29th, and Northwestern State on the 30th. Now, not only are they one of those schools that will play a bunch of D1s every year and get smacked, let me tell you some of the other teams that they have played this season, non-D1. They played two games against Martin Methodist JV.
JV?
Yeah. Southwestern Assemblies of God.
Who gave us Stephen F. Austin, made him sweat.
Oh, yep. All right. So that's
should have won that game, but that's a story for another day.
Texas Wesleyan JV, Central Baptist JV, a bunch of schools with Bible in their name, National Park College,
like Rangers.
I bet that's their name. Hold on, let me look.
Please be the Rangers.
I'll bet you anything they're the Rangers. Let's see. I'm on their website. They go by NPC. They are the Nighthawks.
Ooh.
I'm out on them.
How far does this cycle go until it ends to you reach the bottom of the teams that you bring in so you get wins? Because we've already gotten down to like the JV squads that they're playing. Where does it end? You start playing high schools?
Yeah, I wonder who these JV squads play.
Just ran like some pickup team from like the rec center.
Yeah.
I think that's it. They start playing the intramurals.
Oh, wait. Oh, holy shit. And this is the men's basketball schedule. I have confirmed this for Champion Baptist. On January the 25th, they play Mississippi University for Women.
Hold on.
I shit you not.
Mississippi University for Women?
But how do we know that it's exclusively for women?
That's what I'm looking up right now.
Did they like just go co-ed but not change their name?
It says it's co-ed.
Imagine being a guy in Mississippi and saying you go to Mississippi University for Women. I couldn't imagine it.
The motto of the school is a tradition of excellence for women and men.
Is there an Olympic?
Is there a? I was saying, like, yeah.
I'm imagining just like a bunch of like people, like a board of directors sitting around at a conference table, like, how can we make our motto more inclusive now that we have, but like, now that we're co-ed? And just like, everybody's just like murmuring, and one guy's just like, I've got it. What if we add and men to the end?
Which was preceded by the conversation of how do we increase enrollment? And it's, but it's like,
let's stick to our it's amazing runner.
That because each one of these people that play on these teams is infinitely better at basketball than me. And it's amazing how many good basketball players there are out there in this country.
I've got a fun fact for you guys. In 1971, Mississippi State College for Women won the Intercollegiate Women's Basketball National Championship, the third ever held. Do not ask me what division, where this comes from, but they won it. National champions.
It's still a banner.
Congratulations.
A banner.
I want to see that banner. Where's that banner?
Apparently there was a big Supreme Court case involving them. Hold on. Oh, that's... In 1982, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in the case of Mississippi University for Women v. Hogan that the nursing school's single-sex admissions policies were in violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Following this decision, the Board of Trustees, blah, 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 ordered the university to change its policies to allow the admission of qualified males into all university programs.
And there you have the answer.
The more you know. Is Mississippi University for Women having a moment? Are we sure Mississippi University for Women is good?
I am looking at pictures of Mississippi University for Women's gym, and I see no banners up.
Wow, no school pride over there. Come on, yes. Really upsetting. Hey, how many does it look like that gym seats? Are there seats?
There are, yes, there are seats, confirmed. I'm really bad at estimates, but I want to say like 500, 600 people.
All right.
Yeah.
That's something.
You could like walk around on the top deck too.
Wow, they're fancy.
What kind of scoreboard do they have?
It's your standard like home and away. Don't even have their mascot on the home. Just fouls and player number.
So let me set this up. Our dear editor Kyle moved to Idaho about a month ago to run the sports page of a local paper.
Yes,
and you do a good amount of high school basketball coverage of two high schools out there. Is that correct?
Three, believe it or not.
Three. All right. So why don't you tell us who those schools are and how they're doing? The people need to know.
Already. The first school, which is the hometown school, they're the Sandpoint Bulldogs. Unfortunately, the girls' team is 0-3 right now. The guys' team is 0-1. They have the same mascot as Gonzaga, which is pretty neat, like same logo and everything. Both schools have first-year head coaches this year, so it's expected to be kind of rebuilding years for both of them. But yeah, I am actually covering a girls' game at something called it's here. They're going to play against Timberlake High School tomorrow. So if you're in the Sandpoint, Idaho area, let me know. I will be there. I'm going to be the dorky-looking guy in glasses with the camera. There aren't too many of us to spot, so that's me.
What is the mascot name for Timberlake High School?
Hold on.
The JTs.
The Justins. Yeah.
God.
Hold on. They are the...
Also the Bulldogs.
Lakers.
They're the Tigers.
And have they misappropriated anybody's logo?
No, it's standard generic Tiger.
Ah, okay.
And then I guess the other two high schools are covered, just to do a little quick rundown. I covered the Priest River Spartans. Priest River is a town about 20 to 30 minutes east or west of me. They play in the smallest division in Idaho. Their girls team's 1-1 right now. They lost last night to a team named St. Mary's. Their mascot's the Lumberjacks. They have almost the same uniform as like Fairfield, I think. But yeah, just like, I don't know. They're a really small school.
That's an impressive uniform repository on your head.
Thanks. I commit my brain to the dumbest things.
Hold on. Priest River Spartans.
Yes.
Priest River, the Spartans.
Yes.
a very non-priestly mascot.
Yeah.
Like they could be the friars or the deacons or something that's not a Spartan.
Hell, they could be like the Crusaders if they wanted to. Like, having grown up.
Oh, Crusaders would be good.
In like Christian school lore, you see a lot of lions and a lot of Crusaders. So. Yeah. They lost. They missed a buzzer beater last night that would have sent it to overtime. Which is a bummer for them. But they're another young team as well. And the last school I cover is Clark Fork. They're about 20 minutes to the east of me. Still in Idaho. And their mascot is the Wampus Cats.
Ooh, you totally parried the lead there.
That is good. They went total minor league baseball on their name.
The Wampus Cat Appreciator has logged on.
But yeah, I've not seen any of their schools play yet, just by virtue of them being, I think, the furthest school that I cover. But I will be there sometime. I'll be down in Clark Fork eventually.
But what have you enjoyed most about Idaho in your 1 month existing there?
The people I met have been very supportive, and you know, it's a very small town, so they're very proud of their athletics, very proud of their high school, whatever teams that they had played for or graduated for. This is the smallest place I've ever lived in. I grew up in Tucson, went to college in LA. So, you know, I'm still kind of getting used to having, you know, four-way stops everywhere and, you know, a very, very small town, but I love it. People here are friendly. It's very picturesque. I'm right on a lake, and I have skiing at my leisure about like 7 minutes away. I don't ski, so that'll be a little bit difficult for me.
Do they have cell phone service?
They do, yes. I have had cell phone service up here. The one qualm I have is that my work Wi-Fi is better than the Wi-Fi at the house that I'm staying at right now. So,
but you're moving next week.
Yes, I'm moving right, my own place next week.
Great.
Have you just been living with like a host family or something?
Yeah, mutual friend of a friend of my dad coworker.
Gotcha.
That is lucky as hell.
Yeah, like honestly, when I got the job, I had never heard of Sandpoint, Idaho, and then all these people like popped out of the woodwork with ties to the area up here, and yeah, I don't know.
Is someone beating an animal on the back?
No, I'm throwing my Nerf basketball against the wall.
Oh, that was my next
guess. Because I have a Nerf basketball a hoop in my office.
I have a toilet hoop.
Strong.
Yeah, it's great. I could shoot hoops while I poop. What else did we want to talk about?
We got so off track. So
this is going to be such a beast to edit. You want to plug the Stockwatch and the Brutality board?
If you follow John, you know his bye game thing. So and so loses a bye game to so and so. It's the epitome of brutality. This is my second year keeping track of it, and I really should have kept last year's instead of just deleting it and restarting. Some of the big winners from the early season brutality: Stony Brook has won 3 bye games, I believe, all against Atlantic 10 schools.
That's the way to do it.
George Washington has lost 3 bye games. Fix the sheet. The Atlantic 10 as a whole has already lost 10 bye games, most of them by teams that are bad. Tonight was actually our first instance in which a team was actually favored to win. Vermont handled George Washington by 16. KenPom gave them a 57% chance to win. Looks like we've had 27 brutalities thus far this year.
Which teams have been brutalitied more than once?
Let me check. We've got SMU twice. George Washington 3 times, and Richmond twice are the only ones that have had multiple so far.
And do you want to talk about the Stockwatch?
Yeah, so the mid-major stock exchange is an idea that I had during the off season, which is exactly what his name is. It's a stock exchange for mid-major teams. I've been working with John Templon, who some of you might know as NY Buckets on Twitter, and through his amazing work and know-how and genius, he has put together a little web app that you can access in your browser that essentially just automates the entire game, and you can look at different teams' historical prices, who's trending up, who's been going down. We got a leaderboard. It's really become exactly kind of what I had in mind, and I'm still like kind of amazed that he was able to put this together so fast. seems like every couple of days he's adding a new feature to it. And I've just been very pleased with the turnout so far. And I think it's gotten a really good reception from, you know, people that follow us on Twitter and people who read the site. And if you're not already playing, feel free to join. It's, I mean, you can join at any time. You'll start with $500 in your portfolio and you can go from there.
Not real dollars.
Correct. But if you want to buy in with 500 real dollars, my Venmo is at Chris Schutte. Feel free to drop that in.
I would like to say that I'm very happy that I bought another share of Vermont today before its game against George Washington, because they moved up 15 spots in KenPom with that win and are now set up with a pretty good schedule ahead with games that should be tough but winnable moving forward. So I'm hoping that that price will keep going up. I think I have more shares of them than anybody else does.
Yeah, I've got a couple teams that picked up some good wins. I've got some couple shares of Illinois State, some IUPUI, some Harvard. I think Harvard had a nice win tonight. I've got two shares of Cal Baptist, Greg. Got some Detroit. I got a little bit of everything.
Does that one guy still have like $40,000 worth of stocks in his portfolio because he bought Florida A&M?
See, the way that the pricing works, and John would be able to describe it better than I could, is that it's all relative. It's all tied into KenPom ranking, and so the minimum price team right now is Delaware State, who's dead last in KenPom. And at the start of the game, I would assume that Florida A&M was probably last in KenPom to start the season. So I think there were 10 cents to at the start. Somebody poured all $500 of their portfolio into it. Florida A&M won their first game, jumped up in KenPom, and the person's portfolio just skyrocketed. Florida A&M is now worth a whopping $4.17. So, no, they're currently $8.08. Sorry, I did not read that correctly.
Thank you for plugging the stock game, because I am now offloading all shares of Montana. I'm down to 33 right now.
Oof. Go Grizz.
Although I am rather atrocious at this game, because I'm a dumb little boy and I'm a very impatient little boy. So both of those things do not do well in the market.
No. Oh, Kyle, I see your trades. Buying a little Pepperdine, I see.
Yes, I am. I'm back in. I'm back on board.
riding the wave.
Oh, yeah.
A little currently the most held stock is Delaware State, which is 42,000 shares. They're currently the cheapest team, so people are doing that. Of teams that aren't like at the very bottom of KenPom, the most popular has been Buffalo. There are 137 shares out there, followed by Illinois State, Grand Canyon, and South Dakota State. So some of the more popular schools that we cover are popular on the stock exchange.
So thank you, everybody, for listening to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. For Chris Schutte, Kyle Cajero, and Greg Mitchell, I am Russ Steinberg. We will talk to you again next week. Have a good one.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.